something I did with the book hit a button. So The Creature from Jekyll Island basically is the story. It starts out as the story of, I think, the Fed. Okay, I think J. Edward Griffith started to write a book about the Fed. And what happened was, as he got deeper and deeper into it, he got deeper and deeper into the history of the world's money. Because the history of the world's money is a mess. But it's not random or haphazard. It's been controlled by the same people for a very long period of time. It is a definite must-read, okay? It's a book that we have in stock. It's called The Creature from Jekyll Island. He tells you in the book, and nobody reads this, no one listens. He tells you to read first the summary and the introduction and the summary from each chapter. He's got, you know, the following exchange was published in the British humor magazine Pinch or Punch on April 3rd, 1957. It is reprinted here as an appropriate introduction as mental exercise to limber the mind for material contained in this book. And he goes on, he says, what are banks for? To make money. For the customers? No. For the banks. So banks are made for, making money from banks. Okay, question. Why doesn't bank advertising mention this? Answer. It would be in good taste, but it is mentioned by implication in references to reserves of $249 million or thereabouts. That is the money that they have made. Now, this is from clear back in the 50s. When the question's out of the customers, the answer is, I suppose so. Then a question. They also mention assets of $500 million or thereabouts. Have they made that too? Answer. Not exactly. That is the money they use to make money. Question. I see. And they keep it in a safe somewhere? Answer. Not at all. They lend it to customers. Question, then they haven't got it. Answer, no. Then how is it? I'm going to go through this without the question-answer thing. You can figure it out. Then how is it assets? They maintain that it would be if they got it back. But they must have some money in a safe somewhere. Yes, usually $500 million or thereabouts. This is called liabilities. But if they've got it, how can they be liable for it? Because it isn't theirs. Then why do they have it? It has been lent to them by customers. Folks, are you starting to sense the circular nature of this? It starts to become humorous because it is very circular. Okay, think about what I'm saying. It says, what are banks for to make money? For the customers? No, for the banks. Why doesn't bank advertising mention this? Answer, it would not be in good taste, but it's mentioned by implication in references to the reserves of $249 million or thereabouts. That's the money they have made. Now, this is from 1957. You can multiply this times probably 100, and you'll be close. So they made money out of the customers? I suppose so. They also mention assets of $500 million or thereabouts. Have they made that too? No, not exactly. That is the money they use to make money. I see. And they keep it in a safe somewhere? No, not at all. They lend it to customers. Then they haven't got it? No. Then how is it assets? They maintain that it would be if they got it back. So it would be an asset if they got it back. But they must have some money in a safe somewhere. Yes, usually $500,000 or thereabouts. This is called liabilities. But if they've got it, how can they be liable for it? Because it isn't theirs. then why do they have it? It has been lent to them by customers. This is a circular. This is the insanity of, folks, this is the insanity of it all. I'm sorry, but I'm just being upfront with you. So you mean customers lend banks money? In effect, the answer is, in effect, they put money into their accounts, so it's really lent to the banks. And what do the banks do with it? Let's see, where was I? And what do the banks do with it? They lend it to other customers. Crazy, huh? But you said that money they lent to other people was assets. Yes, I did. Yes, it is. Then assets and liabilities must be the same thing. Well, you can't really say that. But you've just said it. If I put $100 into my account, the bank is liable to have to pay it back. So it's a liability. But they go and lend it to someone else, and he is liable to have to pay it back. So it's an asset. It's the same $100, isn't it? Yes. But, and then it says the question is, then it cancels out. It means, doesn't it, that the banks haven't really any money at all? And here we go. And then it says, theoretically, never mind theoretically, and if they haven't any money, where do they get their reserves of $249 million or thereabouts? Now remember, folks, this is an old article, very old. So the numbers are very skewed. They're not in line with what's currently going on out there. I told you that is the money they have made. How? Well, when they lend your $100 to someone, they charge them interest. How much? It depends on the bank rate. Say 5.5%. That's their profit. Now, that was back when rates were a lot higher. They've had to push rates a lot lower, folks, to try to keep this economy together. Trust me, they're going to let rates creep up on Trump. They're going to let Trump's going to walk away from this, probably not looking so hot. I think we're going to be in the late 80s soon. In the late 80s, we had runaway inflation, and it really did get out of control. And coins went crazy. Metals did okay. Stock market crashed, collapsed, complete. By the way, mark my words. There is a huge stock market collapse coming. I mean, there is a no-brainer. No questions asked, absolute, undeniable, irrefutable, unquestionable, it's coming. So just prepare yourself for the big kaboosh. The kaboosh is coming. Just as long as you're prepared, you're fine. So it says, I told you, that's the money they have made. How? Well, when they lend your $100 to someone, they charge them interest. How much? Depends on the bank rate. Say 5.5%. That's their profit. Why isn't it my profit? Isn't it my money? It's the theory of banking practice that. And then it says, when I lend them my $100, why don't I charge them interest? You do. You don't say how much. It depends on the bank rate. Say 0.5%. Grasping of me, rather. And then it says, but that's only if you're not going to draw the money out again. So these are your CDs. And then we get into the annuity thing. I'm going to pop that in there. Folks, there's always someone on the show, listening to the show, that's getting ready to do some investing. And they got annuities in the back of their mind. Annuities. Bankonyourself.com. Whole life insurance, all of it. If you have an insurance salesman that is telling you he's a certified financial planner, give it up. Get out of there, okay? You're going to get lied to if you ask. They're going to say, oh, no, this, oh, no, that. Here's how you tell. The way you tell is if they work for one of the major brokerage houses. like Merrill Lynch, Dane Bosworth, Edward Jones, or whatever, they're a legitimate broker. That doesn't mean that they're a good investment. But it does mean at that point that at least they're not just an annuity salesman. You have got to be so careful around annuity salesmen. They sell you these insurance products that are the biggest scam on planet Earth. Do not go near them. So we'll continue this ridiculous dialogue. I don't know how long this goes. So it says, I've told you that's the money they've made. How? Well, when they lend your $100 to someone, they charge them interest. How much? It depends on the bank rate, say 5.5%. That's their profit. Why isn't it my profit? Isn't it my money? Now think about what they're saying here. Folks, these questions make good sense. You give your money to the bank, and they charge you to have it, and then they go loan it back out, and they get more money, and they get money in interest. And they're doing nothing except taking your money, and lending it back out to other people. Now, where are you gaining? This is the Federal Reserve System. Now, does that sound to you like the system that A, our founding fathers set up, or B, that was originally intended to be? No. The original system was coin notes, right? There are some beautiful old coin notes, beautiful, where they actually show the coins, pictures of the coins that are backing up the note. They're some of the most beautiful things you'll ever see in your life. They're gorgeous, 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 gorgeous. We had a gal come in a while ago that we helped her get this huge collection certified. And it was really magnificent. The problem was her ex-husband had beat her. And I mean, he'd left her. He'd spent some huge amounts of money, got hooked up with the wrong people, just put her in a bad financial position. It wasn't good. But the bottom line was, wow, were those some beautiful notes. Well, when they lend your $100 to someone, they charge them interest. How much? It depends on the bank rate. Say 5.5%. That's their profit. Why isn't it my profit? Isn't it my money? It's the theory of banking practice that, okay, it says, when I lend them my $100, why don't I charge them interest? You do. You don't say, well, how much? It depends on the bank rate. Say 0.5%. Grasping of me, rather, is the question. Now, this is from the 50s. That's 60 years ago. So different language, maybe a different culture. But that's only if you're not going to draw the money out again. What? Got lost on that one, didn't I? But, of course, I'm going to draw it out again. If I hadn't wanted to draw it out again, I could have buried it in the garden, couldn't I? Or I wouldn't have given it to the bank. I'd have just hung on to it until I went to spend it. They wouldn't like you to draw it out again. Why not? Because if I keep it there, you say it's a liability. Wouldn't they be glad if I reduced their liabilities by removing it? I mean, folks, I don't know. I understand you're not educated in accounting, but this is so stupid. This is so dumb. You give somebody an asset like your money, okay, and then they call it a liability. So now you give them your money. Now, in a way, it is a liability because they owe it to you, right? But anyway, so it says, why not? If I keep it there, you say it's a liability. Wouldn't they be glad if I reduced their liabilities by removing it? No, because if you remove it, they can't lend it to anyone else. Now, how can you lend out a liability, okay? But if I wanted to remove it, they'd have to let me? Certainly. But suppose they've already lent it to another customer. Then they'll let you have someone else's money. But suppose he wants his too and they've let me have it. This is where it gets interesting. This is where rushes on the bank eventually take place and put us in a bad situation. No, because if you remove it, they can't lend it to someone else. If I wanted to remove it, they'd have to let me, right? Certainly. But suppose they've already lent it to another customer. Then they'll have to lend you someone else's money. But suppose he wants his too, and they've let me have it. You're being purposely obtuse. This is a real conversation. It says here in the beginning, it says, the following exchange was published in the British magazine Punch on April 3rd, 1957. It was an interview between, you know, some British names. It's reprinted here as an appropriate introduction and as a mental exercise to limber the mind for the material contained in this book. So, essentially, what I'm reading to you right now really happened. This was a real conversation, okay? And that's why it does and doesn't make sense. So it says, but suppose they've already lent it to another customer. Then they'll let you have someone else's money. But suppose he wants his money and they've let me have it. You're being purposely obtuse. I think I'm being acute. What if everyone wanted their money at once? Boom, right there, folks. Boom. Keep that in mind. That is called a bank run. This day is coming. Prepare yourself, okay? So they say, if it's the theory of banking, so what bank? So I'll just back up. It's the theory of banking practice that they never would. So let's back up more. You're being purposely obtuse. I think I'm being acute. What if everyone wanted their money at once? It's the theory of banking. It's the theory of banking practice that they never would. So they've come up with this theory that nobody will ever want all their money at once. They've got fractional banking reserve systems based on a bunch of scientific algorithms that say that there's no time that everybody will come to get their money at once, okay? I don't agree. I think there's going to be a bank run, and I think it's going to be ugly, okay? So it's the theory of banking practice that they never would, in other words, want all their money at once. So what banks bank on is not having to meet their commitments, okay? The answer from the guy was, well, I wouldn't say that. And the question was, well, naturally, well, if there's nothing else you can think you can, it says naturally, well, if there's nothing else you think you can tell me, answer, quite so. Now you can go off and open a banking account. Just one last question, of course. And he says, of course, wouldn't I be better off to go off and open up a bank? And isn't that the truth? And I kind of hatcheted that up because I certainly didn't know I was reading it. But I think it shows you how obtuse, how unreasonable our system is. You give them money, they lend it out. A bunch of people make deposits and they lend the money out like crazy. They make interest on it. It's not their money. They're charging you interest to keep it, which is a very interesting concept. They're charging you fees. You poor folks, do you know how many people I talk to that have their money in banks that are paying fees? I mean, like stupid fees. You're paying monthly fees on your bank account. It's like, here, manage my money. I'm going to give you my money, and then I'm going to pay you fees to take care of it. So, you know, when you get into the Creature from Jekyll Island, it basically starts out, it says, what is the Federal Reserve System? The answer may surprise you. It's not federal, and there are no reserves. Furthermore, the Federal Reserve banks are not even banks. The key to this riddle is to be found not at the beginning of the story, but in the middle. Since this is not a textbook, we're not confined to the chronological structure. The subject matter is not a curriculum to be mastered, but a mystery to be solved. So it says, let us start where the action is. And then it gets into the secret meeting on Jekyll Island in Georgia, at which the Federal Reserve was conceived. There was the birth of a banking cartel to protect its members from competition, the strategy of how to convince Congress and the public that this cartel was an agency of the United States. I want to read this. The birth of a banking cartel to protect its members from competition. The strategy of how to convince Congress, think about this, to convince Congress and the public that this cartel was an agency of the United States government. I mean, folks, the brilliance of this scandal is huge. I mean, I think it's the greatest scam that's ever been pulled in the history of mankind. They've stolen all your money, all of it. You have none left. You don't even realize it. The New Jersey railway station it's bitterly cold. I won't even get into it. So basically they talk about, you know, how the railway station was bitterly cold that night, so the weather was bad. It was approaching 10 p.m. and the station was nearly empty except for a few passengers scurrying to board the last southbound of the day, which was typical for 1910. In their hurry to board the train and escape the chill of the wind, a few passengers noticed the activity at the far end of the platform, okay, where the caboose was, I think. And a gate seldom used at this hour of the night was a spectacular sight. Nudged against the end rail bumper was a long car that caused those few who saw it to stop and stare. Its gleaming black paint was accented in polished brass, you know, rails, knobs, frames. Their shades were drawn, but through the open door one could see mahogany paneling, velvet drapes. This is luxury, my friends. Armchairs and so on. So basically, you've got a normal train. And that normal train is departing. It's let me grab this here. It's departing from New Jersey and it's heading to Georgia. In the back of the train, there's a car that's gorgeous, just gorgeous at the back. Doesn't belong there. Well-stocked bar, it says. The name, it says, other cars on the station bore numbers on each one, just to distinguish them from their other brothers. Except on the center of each side was a small plaque of this special car bearing the name, the word Aldrich, okay? The name Nelson Aldrich, senator from Rhode Island, was well-known even in New Jersey. By 1910, he was one of the most well-known, most powerful men in D.C., and his private railway car often was seen at the New York and New Jersey rail terminals during frequent trips to Wall Street. Aldrich was far more than a senator. He was considered to be a political spokesman for big business. As an investment associate of J.P. Morgan, he had extensive holdings in banking, manufacturing, and public utilities. His son-in-law was John D. Rockefeller. 60 years later, his grandson, Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller, would become Vice President of the United States. And it says, no sooner had the senator boarded his car when several more passengers arrived with similar collections of luggage. The last man appeared just moments before the final. All aboard, you know, blah, 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 carrying. And then it says he was carrying a shotgun case. Interestingly enough, while Aldrich was easily recognized by most of the travelers who saw him stride through the station, the other faces were not familiar. These strangers had been instructed to arrive separately. Interesting, right? To avoid reporters. And should they meet inside the station, to pretend they did not know each other. After boarding the train, they had been told to use first names only, not to reveal each other's identity. As a result of these precautions, not even the private car porters or servants knew the names of these guests. These are the most powerful men in the world, the four richest men in the world, getting ready to go to Georgia, to Jekyll Island, and build the Federal Reserve. Back at the main gate, there was a double blast from the engine's whistle. Suddenly, the gentle sensation of motion. On it goes. It said, then to everyone's surprise, it reversed. Okay, here we go. Back at the main gate, there was a double blast from the engine's whistle. Suddenly, the gentle sensation of motion. The excitement of a journey begun. No sooner had the train cleared the platform when it shuddered to a stop. Then, to everyone's surprise, it reversed direction and began moving toward the station again. Now, why would the train take off one direction forward and all of a sudden stop and go backwards towards the station again? Had they forgotten something? Was there a problem with the engine? A sudden lurch and the slam of couplers gave the answer. They had to pick up another car at the end of the train. Sneaky, 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 right? Think about it. A sudden lurch, so you got the, you know, possibly the mail car and so on and so forth. A sudden lurch and a slam in the couplers gave the answer. They had to pick up another car at the end of the train, possibly the mail car. In an instant, the forward motion was resumed and all thoughts returned to the trip ahead and minimal comforts of the accommodations. And so, as the passengers drifted off to sleep to the rhythmic clicking of steel wheels against the rails, little did they dream that riding in the car at the end of their train were six men who represented an estimated one-fourth of the total wealth of the entire world. This was the roster of Aldrich, of the Aldrich car that night. So, I'm sorry, I had the numbers wrong. You had six men who had a quarter of the world's wealth in the Aldrich car. These are the men that started the Federal Reserve. Nelson Aldrich, a Republican whip in the Senate, chairman of the National Monetary Commission, business associate of J.P. Morgan, father-in-law to John D. Rockefeller, Abraham Andrew, assistant secretary in the Treasury, Frank Vanderlip, president of the National City Bank of New York, the most powerful of the banks at the time, representing William Rockefeller and the International Investment Banking House of Kuhn, Loeb & Company. Number four individual was Henry Davison, senior partner of the J.P. Morgan Company. Number five, Benjamin Strong, head of J.P. Morgan's Bankers Trust Company. Number six, Paul Warburg, a partner in Kuhn, Loeb & Company, a representative of the Rothschild banking dynasty in England and France, and brother to Max Warburg, who was the head of Warburg Banking Construction in Germany and the Netherlands. So, essentially, you had a car full of the most powerful men, the largest concentration of wealth on planet Earth. Central control over financial resources was far advanced by 1910. In the U.S., there were two focal points of this control. the Morgan Group and the Rockefeller Group. The two focal points of this control, the Morgan Group and the Rockefeller Group. Within each orbit was a maze of commercial banks, acceptance banks, and investment firms. In Europe, the same process had proceeded even further and had coalesced into the Rothschild Group and the Warburg Group. And an article appeared in the New York Times on May 1931, commenting on the death of George Baker, one of the Morgan's closest associates, and said, 1/6 of the total wealth of the world was represented by members of the Jekyll Island Club. The reference was only to those in the Morgan Group. It did not include the Rockefellers or the European financiers. When all of these are combined, the previous estimate that 1/4 of the world's wealth was represented by these groups is extremely conservative. It is much more likely that over half of the world's wealth was represented by this group of gentlemen. I don't really want to read you the book. I kind of started bouncing. In 1913, the year that the Federal Reserve Act became law, a subcommittee of the House Committee on Currency and Banking, under the chairmanship of Arsène Pujol of Louisiana, completed his investigation, and on it goes. I'm not going to get into this too much. So they go to Jekyll Island, and then what they do is they secretly create brilliant men, brilliant. They create a cartel, okay? They create a cartel. And this cartel is basically, capitalizing on people's lack of faith in banking. It says, the specter of banking, the greatest threat, however, came not from rivals or private capital formation, but from the public at large in the form of what bankers call a run on the bank. This is because when banks accept a customer's deposit, they give it in return a balance in his account. This is the equivalent of a promise to pay back the deposit anytime they want. Likewise, when another customer borrows money from the bank, he also is given an account balance, and it goes on and on. And I think you get the point. It's basically this crazy stacking system. The cartel adopts a name, which was everyone knew. There were the main challenges that faced the tiny but powerful group assembled on Jekyll Island. One was how to stop the growing influence of small rival banks and to ensure the control over the nation's financial resources would remain in the hands of those present. This is their goals. They had to create a banking system. They needed to know how to make the money supply more elastic in order to reverse the trend of private capital formation and to recapture the industrial loan market. They needed to create a system to steal money's, to steal people's money back. It's called inflation, created by John Maynard Keynes, sadly. The third challenge that the Jekyll Island Group had was how to pool the meager reserves of the nation's banks into one large reserve so that all banks would be motivated to follow the same loan-to-deposit ratios. This would protect at least some of them from currency drains and bank runs. The fourth challenge is, should this lead eventually to the collapse of the whole banking system, how to shift the losses from the owners of the banks to the taxpayers. Folks, boom, boom, boom. Can you say bailout? We have had 21 bailouts. 21 bailouts. This is what they did. They knew that this system ultimately was designed to collapse. It didn't work. It wasn't good math. But they didn't care. They wanted to give people what the people thought they wanted, okay? So the cartel adopts a name. Everyone knows the solution to all these problems was a cartel mechanism that had been devised and already put into similar operation in Europe. As with all cartels, it had to be created by legislation and sustained by the power of the government under the deception of protecting the consumer. Under the deception of protecting the consumer. Do you hear this? Under the deception of protecting the consumer. The most important task before them can be stated as objective number 5. How to convince Congress that the scheme was a measure to protect the public. This was no measure to protect the public. This was a measure to basically create monopoly money. You know the game Monopoly. This was it. This was it. This was how they were going to scandalize the population of the United States out of their wealth and create this incredible, messy inflation, I don't know what you want to call it, ruckus, we'll say, okay? They start the inflation ruckus, and then they begin to confiscate your wealth. And folks, like I've said recently, you look at usdebtclock.org, this system is in full throttle. This system is in no way near or similar to anything that's ever happened throughout history. Ever, 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 ever. Okay? This, our Federal Reserve System. Now remember, just because it's still running doesn't make it okay. They've become brilliant. They've had bankruptcies. They've had bailouts, buyouts. They've transferred the debt onto the people. They've created money out of thin air so many times we can't even believe it. This is who we are. This is what America is. This is what the world runs on. The world runs on fiat currency. Now you think, well, it works. It does it. Does it really work? If you're pumping out money in your basement and it's backed by nothing and everybody in the world buys into it, does that make it any better or any stronger? Of course it doesn't. So it's a scandal. It's a scandal. We need to be very aware of this. And then it goes in, you know, on and on. It's a cartel. They created a banking cartel. Then they do the specter of the bank failure. The greatest threat came not from rivals or private capital formation, but from the public at large in the form of what bankers call a run on the bank. And that, you know, that happened, and I apologize. I could just keep going, and I'm not going to because of the sake of time. This is a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. We talked to how a minute ago, that the main challenges were to stop the growing influence of the small rival banks and to ensure the control over the nation's financial resources. So they created a system to crush the little banks. How do you do that? You create charters. Charters say you can't have a bank unless you have one of our charters. If you have one of our charters, you must carry our currency. You can only have so much of a reserve relative between your lending and your deposits, and you can't carry so much assets, you have to turn them over to the Fed. The second one was how to make the money supply more elastic. We talked about that. We folks, the crash of 29 was constructed. I think they knew how bad it was going to be? No, I think it's exactly what they wanted. You know, all the big players that I mentioned earlier, every one of them jumped out of the market 5 days before the big collapse of 29. Every last one of them jumped out. So none of them took a bath. Not one of them took a bath. Guess what they moved into? Gold. Gold, $20 gold pieces, $10 gold pieces, semi-numismatic. Okay, I'm in a hurry here. In fact, I probably won't go. What I want to talk about real quick, I have very little time left. We have hit the lottery when it comes to silver dollar collections. Most of you may be aware that I'm a silver dollar specialist, Morgan dollar specialist, have been for decades, okay? I've probably bought more silver dollars than probably the top 20 dealers in the United States. Tons of them. Tons and tons of them. We believe in them as a long-term investment. As the market changes, they change, etc., etc. We have recently purchased a group of Walking Liberty half dollars, an original roll of 1933 S's. We got certified. They're coming back. A lot of MS-65s. MS-65 means museum quality gem. You might be a little bit familiar with MS-70s. MS-70 is a new modern thing. It's for coins that are perfectly made by computers. The old coins aren't like this. We have a tremendous group that should be back any day from Numismatic Guarantee Corp of MS-64 piece silver dollars, 1934S, the key date of key dates, okay? Now, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for an investor. You can get all the bullion you ever wanted. You want bullion? All you ever wanted, I can get it for you. I've literally done deals that were hundreds of millions of dollars, okay? I've had people come in with hundreds of millions of dollars. Has it taken a little time? Sure. It might take me a month or so to fill that order. But these coins are the end of the end. We got a couple rolls of what I believe to be, I think the original roll of 34S piece dollars uncirculated is the last of the last, and we got it certified. It's a nice deal. So, long story short, if you have a tremendous amount of investment set aside, get out of it or get a portion of it. Let us look at your portfolio. Let us pull out some of the stuff. Let us get you into some of these other growth material. This is the kind of stuff, folks, I want you to understand numismatic coins. My building was built on it, etc. Hey, show's over again. Take care. God bless. We'll be back Friday. Sorry I'm always late. Thanks again. I love you. Pray for us. God bless. Bye-bye.